We're going to call the Finance Committee meeting for June 8th to order, and we'll have Fred lead us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right, we'll look at approval of the minutes from May 11th and May 24th.
So who's on this committee? So move.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
Any discussion?
Well, there's Brian.
Then we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? Carried. All right. Our representative Randy from Bonadio on? There he is.
I am here.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How is everybody?
We are doing well. And we'll give you the floor to review the financial statements.
Okay. I think I'm going to get, am I sharing my screen somehow here? Or does everyone have things in front of them?
Oh,
hang on just a second.
Hold on 1 second, Randy. We're giving you permission.
Yep. There we go. Good
to go.
Let me pick the right screen here. All right. Do we see what I have up there?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, great. So good morning. Thank you for having me this morning. This letter here is the required communications letter. We'll go through this, you know, somewhat quickly. It's pretty consistent, or at least similar to prior years. The one new item here right in the center, and I can make this a little bigger. I'm not sure what kind of screen you guys have. There was a new accounting standard this year, really was more of a disclosure item. So you had to identify the difference between borrowings that were serial type bonds or publicly traded debt versus direct borrowings or direct placements. And so if you looked closely at the footnotes, and I'm sure some of you have noticed that, some debt will be categorized as a direct borrowing or direct placement, and it requires a little bit more disclosure relative to that. But it doesn't change anything else about how they're recorded other than just disclosing. Other than that, there were no new transactions entered into by the county without authoritative guidance. Looking at we'll get to the next page here, accounting estimates we've talked about before, and those estimates are identified.
Join the meeting.
Here, post-employment benefits liability, so that's the commitments you've made to retirees for providing health care through their life. Those are based on actuarial assumptions that are applied to the county's data. We review those that information, make sure that it's reasonable, make sure it's in accordance with the requirements of the standards, et cetera. There is also an estimate of allowance for uncollectible accounts for certain receivables. And we look at, you know, potential uncollectibility here with bankruptcies, tax certiories, payment history, all that stuff that the county applies to determine what's an appropriate rate. And we make sure that it's reasonable, and it was. There's also an estimate for depreciation expense based on useful lives of assets for your government-wide financial statements. And then lastly, the net pension liability, which is the New York State pension system, is actuarially driven. You don't have any control over that, but ultimately it still is management's estimate, you know, of that liability. And so we make sure that that is appropriate. When you talk about disclosures that might be sensitive because of their significance to the financial statements, there really are two that we call out. The two largest ones are your net pension obligations and the OPEB, the other post-employment. Because they're actuarially determined, you know, small changes in those actuarial factors can impact that liability one way or the other, and that's why they're significant. Difficulties encountered performing the audit, and I say this every year, we do work for the county board. So to the extent that we were not able to complete our procedures or get our audit done, we want to let you know that, but we had no difficulties in performing the audit. As usual, Tammy and her team and really everyone we deal with at the county really do a very good job of getting us what we need and getting us the answer. So every year goes very, very well. When we get to the last page here, I'll show you the adjustments that were recorded as part of the audit, both entries that were provided to us by the county, you know, after we were received the initial trial balance, as well as entries we might have posted as part of our audit process. And there are a few adjustments that we call past adjustments or uncorrected misstatements. So things that were not material enough to record, and management determined that they felt they would not misstate the financial statements by not recording them. Disagreements with management. There were no disagreements with respect to the audit process or adjustments that we recorded or recommended. We did receive a representation letter from management, which allowed us to issue the actual audit in final form, which is what we're reviewing today. And then we're not aware of any consultations with other accountants or opinion shopping that's happened throughout the year. And then throughout the year, you know, Tammy or anyone at the county may call us with questions about accounting treatment or accounting things. And those discussions are not used as a condition of our retention. They're really part of the normal professional relationship with accounting. So if we, let's go ahead to the adjustments now. So if we look here in the capital projects fund, and I did, you know, I kind of like this electronic format, and I'm able to add some notes to things like I normally do when I'm presenting to you, but you get to see them. So in the capital projects fund, there was one, you know, large adjustment here related to the county offices and the courthouse projects. So these invoices came in after year end. When looking through the detail of those, they actually were for expenditures or activities that occurred prior to year end. So those were required to be accrued. So that was an expense to the capital projects fund. And you know, that fund is an annual or a project-based fund as opposed to an annual fund. So that's more of an ongoing, you know, deficit there, or fund balance there, if you will, not a deficit. In the general fund, you can see a few categories. So we had a few audit adjustments here. The biggest one related to reducing the liability for the medical assistance program. And then there was a number of items here that Tammy gave us after the initial trial balance we received, or adjustments that they identified, you know, mostly related to public health, you know, or not public health, but DSS and some of the grant related programs that are out there as more information came to light. And you can see how the impact of all of those, essentially it made the loss or the change in negative fund balance from 4.4 down to 2.8. So all of those were positive adjustments to the county's general fund balance for the year. A few other adjustments in funds, solid waste landfill. There was, after we had the trial balance, you know, Tammy just needed to record the December accrual for landfill revenues. So that brought that fund back down to essentially break even. Custodial fund, this was really recording, and this is, you know, somewhat new, this GASB 84, which was implemented last year. We had to record a lot of the additions and deductions related to the custodial activities. And that's what that relates to. And Tammy's in the process of incorporating all of this stuff into the software so that we don't have to book these as adjustments. But this standard was implemented late last year in the middle of 2020. And so there's kind of a time lag in getting the system all ready. And then lastly, private purpose trust fund, same thing, kind of cleaning that up in accordance with GASB 84. And then the last page here are those uncorrected misstatements that I talked about, three of them essentially. One, there was two projects that did not get accrued properly actually back in 2019. And so fund balance theoretically was overstated because those expenditures were not recorded. But when you get into 2020, then they become understated in expenditures. And at the end of the year, they zero themselves out. So from our perspective and management's perspective, there was no need to book that backwards. And the second one, again, related to work that was recorded in 2020, although some of that work really happened in 2021, the impact of that was only $54,000, so we passed on booking that as well. And then lastly, there was a few expenditures that were going to be funded by state or federal aid. So if we had booked the expenditure, we'd have to book the revenue, so the impact essentially on the bottom line were zero, so we elected just to not book those at all, because there'd be no real effect on the net position or fund balance of the county. Any questions at all related to this letter? Okay. So
go ahead.
Yep. Okay. So I'm going to go now quickly looking at the highlight package. And so again, just this is kind of our key messages page, and hopefully you can see that sufficiently enough. Our opinion on the financial statements, if you looked at those, is unmodified, or that's a clean audit opinion. As I've talked about in the past, that's the highest level of assurance that can be given. So that's what you're looking for. And then we did not identify any material weaknesses in internal control that are required to be reported. So controls are operating as you would expect. And as I mentioned before, the audit process went very well. It generally does on an annual basis. And everything we need to get our audit done is provided to us on a timely basis. Talking at a high level, the government-wide financial statements, and that terminology, if you recall, is the financial statements that are on the full accrual basis. So all of your assets and liabilities are recorded. You know, the most significant changes here, capital assets went up by about $17.4 million. Most of that's construction in progress. And as you walked around the county, you know exactly what's going on. So they got the court renovation project, you know, several road and bridge projects that are in place. And then the other big purchase was the three community services buildings that were purchased. Secondly, the other increase was the OPEB liability went up about $2.4 million, really as a result of the actuarial changes that were driven there. Nothing, it's all non-cash related changes, but ultimately that was the impact. And then same with the net pension liability. There was $31 million of increase related to the liability. And then, you know, because of timing of some of the actuarial changes, the deferred outflow of resources went up about $20 million and deferred inflows about $3 million. So if you're looking at that, the net impact of that change, you know, was about $7, $8 million to the county. And the main reason for the changes in the net pension was their value of their investments had a decline over that period of time. But again, nothing that you can control. The general fund, a few highlights here, a decrease, as I mentioned earlier, by about $2.8 million or 3%. There were, you know, three of the largest decreases in revenue related to property taxes, and we'll see that on the next page. I'll talk about it. About $1 million in sales tax decrease, as well as another $500,000 in occupancy tax. There was about a $1.6 million decrease in departmental income. And as you can imagine, with the interest rates dropping over the course of 2020, you had less interest earnings as well. They were offset a little bit by state aid, which went up about 2.4, and federal aid by about 1.2. So, you know, almost washes those two pieces out. We had a small decrease in general fund expenditures, as you can see. And then when you look at the budgetary perspective, you know, as you can imagine, actual revenues were lower than the modified budget by about 7.8%. And then at the same time, no expenditures were down as well, about $23.6 million. And then looking down the road, accounting standards, you know, there's a new accounting standard which will be effective for 2022, accounting for leases. So that'll probably be, you know, one of the more significant changes for the county in a while. In terms of how you account for that. And so, you know, we've already been talking to Tammy a little bit about it and things that need to be done to, you know, kind of be prepared for that accounting standard change. So this is looking at a four-year history of the general fund. You can see total assets, you know, they were about $121 million back in 17. They went up a little bit and back down in 2020. As you're, you know, spending for some of the capital projects, you've got to use cash until funding comes in for that. In this line here, investments went away primarily because of the lower interest rates. The shift went more to CDs in the current year, as well as, you know, spending. State and federal aid receivables are up about $7 million over last year with the timing of those receipts. Looking at the liabilities, they're actually down. Year over year, about $8 million less this year compared to last year, mainly in the accounts payable component of that, as well as on the unearned revenue side. So some monies that you had unearned became recognized in the current year. And total fund balance is just over $90 million for the year. 68.8 of it is in the unassigned. And you can see the categorical amounts there in assigned and restricted. And then we always, so here's the P&L. As I mentioned, down about $3 million in tax. Two main reasons, really, more revenue was allocated to other funds for property tax than just the general fund. So that looks like a decrease in taxes. And then secondly, the deferred tax adjustment. In 2019, that adjustment for deferred taxes or uncollected taxes at the time was an increase to revenue. This year, it reduced revenue. So those two impacts kind of caused that to decrease. So overall revenue down about three. Which we talked about. Expenditures are essentially break even here year over year. And then you had a little more transfers out for the current year. And there's your negative change in fund balance of about 2.8 for the current year. And then the last page are the kind of the highlights that we try to do are the comparisons to all counties. And admittedly, it's not always ideal because of the time lag, but we do like to look at a little bit. I've just highlighted here the charges for services, that component as a percent of revenue decreased in the current year. With the closures in the year, there were certain things that, were not available, that were not running, were not operating, which caused a change in terms of the percent use of your total revenue. So it caused other local taxes, other local things just to have a higher percentage. And your federal year over year was up about, 4% or 4 percentage points. Here compared to the rest of the counties and all of New York State, your reliance on state and federal aid is about 10% higher than the rest of the state in terms of that. Looking at expenditures, your sources, again, this is just a function of the spending to some extent, but you went from 94 to 90% in current operations and your capital outlays went up, actually almost doubled. And you can see here, you were at 7.5 million up to 15.5. So you did have additional capital outlays in 2020, which we know about with the courthouse and project, as you can imagine. Then here's your expenditures by function. We exclude debt out of this scenario. You generally speaking, you're fairly consistent year over year, as you can see there. Not a great comparison to all counties. There's a lot of differences in across the state about where the monies are spent, but at least gives you an idea for the county. Any questions there? I do have the financial statements themselves, but that's a pretty big document to go through. And I know everyone received it in advance as well, but I'll pause for any questions.
Do you have any questions, Sean?
No, I have none.
Anybody? No, I went through the report myself and maybe have some internal questions for Tammy, but thought it was a document that was put together very well, and I didn't find any typos either, so I guess I owe you the dollar this year.
Great, that's perfect. I'll add it to the bill.
No, I think that needs to be kept separate. Thank you very much, Randy.
All right, great. I'll hold tight in case there's something. I know you've got to change the co-host options as well, so I will sit tight until that's done, and then I'll take off.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
Do we need to accept the report or do any?
No.
All righty. All right, let's.
Do we usually, Tammy?
It doesn't hurt if you.
Okay.
I'll move to accept it.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. All right, let's move on to department requests. Patty.
Good morning, everybody.
Most of you are familiar with this already, but we're getting two allocations of funds for COVID vaccines in our department. And they're each a little bit different. The first one is the ADRC, No Wrong Door, COVID vaccine funds. That's the Aging and Disabilities Resource Center. So these funds can be used for people of any age. It's in the amount of $11,804. And we'd like to allocate part of it to Arnett Health, 5451 for Arnett Health. They're already doing in-home vaccines. I've worked with Jack and Darlene, and we think that is the greatest need right now for these funds. The rest of the allocation I'd like to set aside for a second contract to be determined. Agencies need to get approval in order to be able to give vaccines. So that is in the works right now. So I just need approval to accept and allocate that first.
We have a motion. Can I have a second? We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. The second one is the VAC5 funds. That's $14,549. And this is specifically for older adults over 60. And I'd like to allocate all of that to Arnett Health, who's already doing the vaccines in home.
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Thank you. Dr. Chapman, you're in the hot seat.
Johnson Hilda.
Morning. I've got a few items to run past you. We'll start with our electronic medical records. Excuse me. Several months ago, we put out an RFP for a new EMR. In response to the RFP, we got 8 proposals. The initial price quotes ranged from $93,768 to as high as $1,001,107. I recommend that we accept a company by the name of NetSmart. Their initial purchase price of software is $228,737.51 with an ongoing annual maintenance fee of $108,407.51. We've got $350,000 in the capital project line that we set aside to make the purchase. So I'm looking to get your approval to accept their proposal and then enter into a 5-year contract not to exceed $662,237.55.
That would include the purchase and then any annual maintenance on the not to exceed price?
Correct.
And is this software that we currently use, or this is something new?
This is something new. We currently have Cerner, which used to be Anasazi. They actually submitted a proposal as well. But in going through the demos, it seemed like the functionality, it was a little more user-friendly with the NetSmart software.
So it's a... We utilize a service or we utilize a package that's similar, but are looking to go to a different, we had to put out an RFP anyhow. And like Hank said, instead of going with the current vendor, we're proposing a change.
Is this software as a service as well? Or is this one on a server?
It's cloud-based.
Or cloud-based. Okay.
Yeah, it's all cloud-based.
It'd be huge, especially for what we went through with remote issues. Having that available really gives us much more flexibility than we've had.
So as far as changing the software, is there a program that's been written to convert all these files?
Well, so that's part of the integration with this. So that's why there's that big initial upfront cost, is because there's just a lot of time that the company's getting integrating, essentially facilitating the transition.
Correct. There's some data that will be able to be integrated into the new software. And then what will happen with our current EMR is it'll still be available on the county's network as a read-only. And we'll need that just to have historical clinical information as well as billing information to refer back to it. So not everything goes into the new, but once the new is up and running and we go live, then of course, from that day forward, everything goes into that, any and all.
Hilda?
So a couple of questions. Is there a limit on how many users can be on that system?
Yes, there is, but the parameters of the company set, it covers all 100 or a little over 100 employees can be on it concurrently.
Does it include train? Well, first of all, the 108,400 and something, is that yearly for the 5 years?
Correct.
So that, even though the initial load and bringing the history in, that seems like a lot of money, but
it is. But what that includes is any and all updates. So new versions of the software included with that. There's other features that come along with it. There's appointment reminders. There's dictation, you know, transcription services as well. So
you didn't have that in the other system?
No, we have those in separate contracts, but this will be all inclusive now.
And they do the training as well?
Correct.
I make the motion.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any other questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Great. Thanks, everybody. Moving on to contracts. I've got a few items. CASA Trinity. They submitted a proposal to become a regional certified community behavioral health center. It was approved, and they're going to receive $3.8 million in federal grant money. So where my department comes in is we were included as part of their proposal to provide 24/7 crisis outreach services. And for providing those services, we'll receive $83,355 over this next year. So I'm looking to get your approval to enter into a contract with CASA. Date to start June 15th of this year through June 15th of next year, 2022.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any questions or any other discussion? Yes.
With entering into this with 24-hour coverage, is that going to add any personnel in your office, or that's already?
We currently have staff that work after hours on a rotational basis, a rotational schedule. But to answer your question, we will be. And that's in another item in a few minutes, our contract with Pathways. We will be adding an additional staff person as part of that group to help, you know, better our 24/7 coverage.
Thank you.
Do those referrals for the 24/7 coverage come from CASA Trinity, or do they come from other places?
They come from anywhere in the community.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Another RFP that we partnered with CASA Trinity was in response to New York State Local Drug Treatment Court. The proposal was accepted. My department will provide case management, substance abuse assessments, and medication-assisted treatment for people that are going through the drug treatment court. CASA will provide peer supports and MAT. So in this particular instance, CASA Trinity is the lead agency with the proposal. So I'm looking to get your approval to enter into a contract with CASA Trinity to start July 1st and run through September 30th of 2023. So it's about a year and a half span. We'll receive a total of $146,451 to provide the services over that time frame.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Do you have the staff in place for that?
That will be, we'll add to our current service contract with Pathways to have a staff person to do that.
I guess that one was maybe the one we should have done first. Then we wouldn't have to keep asking you that question. All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm excited about this program because I think it's something that we've needed for many years. This will better ensure that the people that are going through drug treatment court are compliant with services. They're hooked up with treatment services and other supports that they need to be successful to stay out in the community. So I think this will be a good thing.
Agreed.
And lastly, Pathways contract. So I'm looking to get your permission to add $80,500 to our current contract with Pathways. This will enable us to hire a mental health counselor that'll work part of our 24/7 crisis outreach program. It'll also allow Pathways to hire a substance abuse counselor to provide the case management and assessment services as part of the drug treatment court program.
So the federal grant generates $83,000 to the county?
The federal...
The CASA.
3.1.
Correct. 83,355.
Fund you're looking for now for pathways?
Pathways, it would just be because we're halfway into the year, I'd be looking just to add half of the total. So that's why it's 80,500.
So there will be some.
There, no, that will cover the cost of the position. In addition to the position cost, what's nice about this in terms of sustainability for the future, because you might ask, well, what do we do when the grant funding goes away, is the services are billable. So we'll be able to maintain both of these positions through billable services.
All right. We have a motion now. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any other questions? Oh, Hilda has a question.
So this is in line with what you're talking about and all the funding. It's so important because I sent the whole legislature and I even sent the city council the latest OD mapping information that shows this problem's not going away.
No.
And it's, there's a discussion whether it's two fatalities or four so far this year, but nevertheless, two is too many and four is even worse. And it's only June. So in keeping with what you're doing, it's really, we have to do it. We have no choice.
I agree.
Well, and the other observation is that if you have people on the street that have Narcan and they administer it to someone, those are counted in this OD mapping type stuff. If it's not administered by a healthcare professional or a police officer, is that not counted in the mapping?
No, it's only what's reported.
Right. So, I mean, it probably only scratches the surface of the real issue, and right. We need to take these kinds of investments very seriously.
I think it's safe to say that the deaths are underreported at this point.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
So I just wanted to reiterate, we had in the Prevention Coalition, we did a Narcan training. And unfortunately, I don't think anybody in the legislature or the council called into that. But you would have gotten a free Narcan, two doses, would have been mailed to you from Erie County. Erie County did it for us for no cost.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to take advantage of those because you never know when you're going to need it.
Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you, Hilda. All right, Sheriff.
I can't remember numbers from here to there. You know that.
Thank you. I just want to say real quick, Hank's staff has been awesome to work with in the jail. And there's a legislature at the state where they're going to require every jail to start medically assisted treatment in the jail, obviously with no funds applied to that. So the working with Hank's staff has been phenomenal, and also his mobile crisis staff. We've been able to send out members of his staff with deputies to folks that are in crisis and resolve that, especially the rise in adolescents that we're seeing right now. And so I just thank you, Hank, for what your folks do. Public safety vests. This is the Bureau of Justice grant. They match half. We would like to receive $8,780, and the budget would be $17,560 because it's matching. However, any SROs is fully funded by the school district, and the police officers, the deputy sheriffs, we receive the balance of that through a state grant. The only ones that we only get half on is corrections and probation.
We have a motion and a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Sheriff. All right, Tammy.
Any questions on the monthly reports?
I didn't have any questions. Sure.
I just want to give you a compliment, Tammy, that I took from the auditor. One of the biggest things is he said your quick response time and getting him all the information that he needs. I mean, that makes his job easier and it makes us look good as a county. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, while they're here, it does not feel very quick. I just have to say.
The faster you get them in, the faster you get them out is always a good thing when it comes to an audit.
Yeah. So. And that management discussion and analysis always takes forever, but it's all good. I think the other two topics Mitch is going to handle, and then we'll have an executive session for some real property tax.
Could I just ask the question before you go into that? Under these new guidelines sitting out there dealing with leased equipment,
yes.
Can you give me an overview of what they're really looking for here?
Basically, if my understanding, and it's funny, I just looked at it yesterday because, you know, no sense getting ahead of the game here. My quick look at the guidance is that any leases that we have, we'll have to record, it used to be once upon a day that only if it was a true capital lease where you end up owning the equipment at the end, would you have to record the asset and the liability. My understanding very preliminarily is that we will have to do that even if it's what we historically call an operating lease, where we don't end up with the equipment at the end. We will still have to record the liability because we're committed to it. So that's my understanding.
Brainstorm.
I don't know, Gatsby. A lot of theirs are like, what? So that's my understanding. I'm not sure how many we're really going to have. I mean, I know we have the vehicles, but beyond that, I'm not sure that we have others.
Well, I just can't imagine what the debit and the credit would be then. So if you're booking a loan, what are you, you have to record it as equipment? Or?
Yes, an asset. The asset, the leased equipment or the leased.
It's not asset. Owned, but it's on the asset list.
Right.
That's so wrong. Okay.
Yep.
We used to avoid all capital leases for that very reason. Right. We would only do operating leases according, and then now that's out the window.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Accounting lingo. That was exciting.
Oh yeah, real exciting.
So a couple items for the committees to consider today. First is a couple changes to the Appendix A of the investment policy. This is where we list in the limits for our authorized depositories. So the changes we're requesting are to get rid of Steuben Trust, as they're now part of Community Bank. Also to add C&N, which is formerly known as Citizens of Northern Bank, and also to increase the limit to 45% for the banks that I've listed in the memo I sent to you all. Part of the reason for the request for the change is we're often approaching our 35% limit at one bank or another at any given time. So with ARP funding coming, that's only going to exacerbate that problem. Increasing the limit will give us a little bit more flexibility to stay under those limits. And those are self-imposed in our policy, and we have the ability to periodically change those. So
is there any given reason why we have limits sitting out there?
We have to. Our policy is based on the comptroller's model policy. Different counties can do it different. Some counties select one bank. Others set it by a dollar amount. They set that threshold as a dollar amount. We chose to do percentages because it's a more fluid limit.
So what you're saying here is that in any of these banks you're raising to 45%, that's the maximum we can put in of funds that we're investing. Is that my understanding of this?
It's 45% of the county's total cash and investments at any given time cannot exceed 45% at one of those institutions.
That's directed by us.
Correct.
And this would also come with various collateral agreements as well.
Yes.
Okay. So a collateral agreement covers us for anything over the FDIC limit. Okay.
Just so you're aware too, some of the banks limit how much they'll take. So for example, you know, a given bank, we may have this 45, but they're saying, no, you can't send us more than X amount of dollars because of the collateral.
Right.
They don't want to collateralize anything above X amount. So even though we say 45%, their limit may put us at
50%. Good point.
I'll move it.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions or discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
And just a note on that, because of the second item, we may eventually be coming back to do further amendments to that policy, but we needed to make those changes because of the ARP funding coming imminently. So just as a heads up, we may come back to change those because of this item. So the second item is a potential agreement with 3+1. And I kind of described that in the memo I sent to you all. You know, with interest rates as low as they are and treasury bills even worse, the ARP funding on the way, Tammy and I tried, you know, in an effort to be proactive and you know, trying to maximize our interest earnings, we've known for a long time, I think we could do more. But you know, there's always that fear of cutting ourselves short with cash and covering our operating expenses and other expenses throughout the year. So what 3+1 would give us, through their product, which is called Cash Vest, is ongoing analysis, data and forecasting, to help us kind of strike that balance of maximizing investments, but making sure we have enough cash on hand to cover costs. They would also give us peer interest rate data. So we know that we're getting whatever the market rate is for our interest rates. They also do, as part of their analysis, they look at our banking account structures and the fee structures to potentially find savings in those areas as well. They are, I believe we'd be the 30th county using 3+1. So they're pretty widespread throughout the state as far as utilization. It's a NACO and NYSAC endorsed company and product. Just as far as results, and I'm cautious to promise anything as is 3+1, which is something that made me feel a little bit better. But you know, some of the counties we've talked to using the program, I wanted to just talk about some of the experience they've had. So Allegheny County, using the product, they went from a little under around $80,000 in 2017 for their interest earnings and increased that to almost $800,000 in 2019. And similarly, Genesee realized about $1 million in benefit, you know, from their relationship with 3+1. So, you know, clearly a lot of benefit others are seeing and results others are seeing. And hopefully we would see something similar. We're larger than both of those two counties. So, you know, the potential there is pretty good. And, you know, an area that the comptroller fairly recently has been critical of some counties who aren't doing enough with their cash. And, you know, he's been critical of counties who have stale cash sitting around that isn't earning any interest or money on their investments. So, the cost is $40,625 per year, which would be paid quarterly. And you know, I think Tammy and I both think this is a good direction to go, and I think we'd see a lot of benefit from it. So we'd be looking for a motion to authorize us to enter into that agreement.
So I have several questions.
I got one question. Do you think it's realistic to realize that $40,000 easily each year during the course of the contract based on the other county's performances?
I think that is a reasonable, I think we would easily cover that $40,000.
John.
Well, I guess for a long time, I've tried to promote long-term investments with some of these county funds. Does this operation, does this firm propose anything like that?
Yeah, I think
at one time when Mr. Donnelly was here, we talked about 20 to 30 million to be invested long term. I think that situation would have shored up some of our interest losses last year sitting out there. That's one of the things that I would like to see promoted. So what are we currently making in interest? Is it 0.5% or what at this point?
Less than half, about a quarter of a percent is about what we're seeing.
And so what information do you need to provide these people? Do they actually come in and look at the whole accounting system sitting out there, what your expenditures are? And I guess one of my points is we know what our expenditures are. We have a track record of 4 or 5 years sitting out there. And are we paying them to do something that we can do ourselves?
No. You know, essentially what they do is they get read-only access to all of our banking data, our transactional data, and they pool all of that together, plug it into their computer. You know, they have an algorithm type system, a computer program that they plug data into that will give us a better idea of cash flow than we've previously had before. And what they'll do is use that data and apply that data, to invest more. So I mentioned earlier this, you know, the stale cash not being invested, we'll have less of that. They're trying to maximize our investments, and not leave anything sitting on the table.
So actually, we're not going to make any more money. We're just going to invest more wisely with liquid cash. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I think we will earn more, and I think we'll see an increase in what we've traditionally been investing.
So if we've limited our investments to these banks that we originally just voted on, how are we going to make any more money? I don't quite understand how we're going to do that.
That's why I mentioned that.
Just more money being invested at any given time?
Well, and I think we'll have more leverage to get better rates than we have been getting. But I think the selling point for me is just know the peace of mind knowing that you're getting market competitive interest rates. Mm-hmm. That we're investing more than we traditionally have, which will allow us to earn more, plus save money on fees and that type of thing that we've been, you know, likely been paying more than we should. So
one of your examples was Allegheny County, mm-hmm. and what they made from 1 year to the next. A lot of that had to do with interest rates, where they were in 1 year given the next year sitting out there. So it wasn't all a product of 3+1 or whatever this is. So I guess I'm really not in favor of this, but if you want to try it for 1 year, if that's all we can obligate ourselves for, I wouldn't want to see this thing unless we had an actual track record of what they'd done for us. But $43,000 is a lot of money. When all we made was this last year in interest was what, $700,000? So
it'd have to come back to you for reauthorization, like an annual contract.
Mm-hmm.
How soon before we would see some kind of report from them on their recommendations?
I think pretty quickly.
Gathering the data, they go back 3 or 5 years, but they go back always. And you need to go back that far because
to determine liquidity and
sure, right. And revenue fluctuations alone. I mean, our expenditures are fairly consistent with the exception of capital projects and stuff, but the revenue fluctuations are what's top. And John, to your point, in terms of the software capability, right now, our software system, it would be so labor intensive to spend time trying to figure out because when we move cash around, which we do all the time, I mean, we're moving cash from bank to bank to bank to bank, both to manage our percentages as well as to manage the interest rate. You know, we do shop around for interest rates and we do move money based on that, you know, based on where we can get the better interest rate. So in our system, that all shows up as, you know, an increase in cash. We don't have the ability to smoosh that all into one analysis. Or if we did, it would be all an Excel-based proposition, which would take forever and ever and a day. So I do think that they will certainly be able to pull together using their software system, which is, I mean, like it's tested. They've used it at least 30 times. And they pull the data from the bank. So they, you know, they get that in the format. You know, they don't have to massage it at all. They'll just drop it into their system and it'll spit out the data. But yeah, I think it certainly will be helpful. And in terms of,
can you come up to the microphone?
Sorry.
Those folks,
I'm yelling. And
I know, but those folks up on the,
in terms of, you know, what vehicles they might recommend, they may recommend something else entirely from what we're doing. You know, we've had conversations about getting into 10-year investments and I hesitate because yes, we would have won the last time, but we might've lost the time before that. So I always, 10 years, like that's so long.
Well, I don't think I ever would deal with anything 10 years, yeah. 5 years at a maximum sitting.
But we do have limitations. You know, we can only invest in debt of New York State.
Does the investment policy, I know we just changed the percentage of an institution can have, but does our investment policy also dictate the term or the liquidity of our investments? Are we allowed to have a certain percentage of in long-term versus short-term?
I don't think it's defined.
No.
It's not defined.
Okay. So hopefully this organization can help
Recommend
the best utilization of that in order to get long-term rates without crimping the ability to be liquid for unforeseen.
Their presentation, you'll like their presentation once we, in terms of how long it will be, I would expect a quarter maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think it's an important tool that we can consider using for two reasons. Number one, our audit report noted the decline in interest and granted that is because of a decline in rates, but they might be able to suggest something else for us. And second, like you said, the comptroller is looking at it. And if we have stale cash, that's not good management of our funds. So it would seem to me that at least trying it on a trial basis is a good idea.
But neither is buying Bitcoin either. So
yeah, right, exactly.
So that's not an allowed investment. So we're all right, Hilda.
So in my vast financial experience,
oh boy,
because I am such an expert on finance, 1 year is not going to be enough for us to do this. I mean, I could see it being a couple of years of trial to see if this thing's working for us, but it sounds like it's the way to go since they're the experts in this kind of thing.
Well, I think even in a 1 year window, if they recommend putting in some long-term investments, you're going to be able to see what your earnings are because they're locked in for a longer term. So you could calculate what was the savings derived from these recommendations.
The other thing that I think that this has the benefit for, and this is still an unknown, so I'm not trying to give you an oversell on this, but there's bills in front of the Senate and the Assembly that NYSEC advises that there's a halfway decent chance it passes, opening up counties' investment, local government investment options to match what the state has. Right now, ours are much more restrictive.
Mm.
And if they do that, a company like this could really help us leverage those.
Yeah.
Especially if they deal with the retirement fund in their way they invest money. Yeah. So,
although they did well.
All right. So if we're considering this, I will entertain a motion.
So for 1 year. That's. I'll make that motion for 1 year, and we see how this plays out.
Second.
Are there any other questions or discussion? Gary, online, are you still there?
Yes.
Still there. Did you have any other questions, Gary?
No.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Only question, how are we
pay for
we paying
it?
This?
We
interest
at
earnings.
Minor details.
We think we can cover it for this, for the 6 months. We figure 2 quarters. We can cover it out of our budget.
And then budget. Okay.
And then we'll put it in the 2022 budget.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, do we want to cover your two items before we go into executive session?
If you don't mind.
Not at all.
And if you don't mind, if you're okay with it, I'll take number two first to get that out of the way.
Sure.
Okay, so contingent fund transfer at the last meeting, you're well aware, if you haven't forgotten, that the employee engagement survey was approved, so looking to authorize the $18,000
contingent fund
transfer. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes.
Thank you. So ARP, American Recovery Plan funding, this is probably a much longer discussion. Can talk with the chairman about, you know, probably at some point in my recommendation would need a working group or some sort of special meeting to really hammer out exactly what we want to do. But we have learned a number of things since the last time we talked about this that I thought it's important to share as you folks are thinking about what to do with these funds. We were told by a number of sources as the legislation was getting written that the revenue losses that we could substantiate, which are about $7.9 million, could just be written off and that becomes fully flexible. That is still true. We can also add in all of the payroll costs from the beginning of the declaration of the pandemic, which beginning of March of last year for public health emergency services and possibly portions of Sheriff 911, myself, others. We can write off salary fringe and add that to that pot, which then becomes the word that we had on our NYSAC administrator's call is fungible. some people started saying laundering, but we said, well, let's not say that.
So it basically removes restriction from those uses of the funds?
Correct, except there is one big caveat. We thought that we could throw that into fund balance and really spend that over the course of whatever. That's the part that we have more clarification on that is really not the case. The goal, bottom line, as you're thinking about how to use these funds, we have to spend them. We can't just throw it back into fund balance as cost. We have to spend them, but we have a great deal of flexibility. So the things that you have previously discussed, highway shops, capital projects, roads, I have some ideas that at a work session, I think, you know, we could share. I know we're running late on meetings and everything, so don't necessarily need to get into it now. But you have, based on everything that we're hearing and seeing from Treasury, we have a good amount of flexibility to do something, but they want that money spent.
So this is the total $18 million?
No, this is what we write off. So this is one bucket.
Okay.
This is what we write off.
So the 7.9 million, is that what we're talking?
7.9, but we think we can add
the salary.
So you're probably adding another two. And if any revenue losses are experienced in the next couple of years, as this window is still available, we have, I think, 4 points in time that we can recalculate revenue loss. If there is revenue loss, either in state aid or sales tax or room tax, we can add that to the pot and make that very flexible. But again, the goal is to spend it. We are, we'll be looking for a motion, probably should have you folks accept the acceptance of this $18.6 million. Because working with TAM, we've already submitted the paperwork that Treasury needs. We essentially will get two draws. I don't know if we've actually, they've transferred. We have the first draw. So my recommendation would be to use that flexible pot as your first draw, because then you could start spending on whatever priorities you folks decide. The rest of that, so whatever that difference is of the 18.6, is much more defined. And so that really is for public health and public health response to this or any other, or preparing for other future pandemics. And we have personally have some ideas on that, because there are a few things that we've experienced through this that, and we're not talking huge ticket items, but there are some things that I think we need a little help with in terms of some capital expenditures, small. But we can, obviously it's going to be your choice. We can talk about that. You could also do premium pay for employees should you choose. That's one of the direct ones that are identified in the legislation if you chose that. And then we really get into water, sewer infrastructure and broadband. So tourism is also another one, supporting the tourism industry. So those are the ones that are defined in the legislation as eligible uses. So the flexible, you have to spend it. We thought that you could put it into fund balance and spend it at a later date. You have to spend it within the course of about 3 years. The other funds, my thought was, let's get rolling on the flexible funding. We can draw that down. We can very easily show what that number is at this moment, and then be able to, you know, start, you know, at a work session or something, start talking about, you know, do you want to do the highway shops like you talked about, or some of them? What do you want to start spending that money on? The others, I figured for those specifically defined ones, that could be our second draw. So you would have about a year to really define what your priorities are for those other ones that are identified in legislation.
Have we asked department heads for ideas on the spend on the original deposit?
Some we have, some we haven't. I haven't put out the official wish list yet. But I have spoken with a number of department heads that I know of that have especially capital needs in the near term, but haven't had that working group session with department heads. And I personally, candidly, have been going sort of back and forth, because we get a whole laundry list of things. Some of them might be very useful. Some of them might not be, but I will reach out to department heads and discuss with them. But I have spoken with the ones that we have a good knowledge that there are things that have either been deferred or are coming up that might fit into that category.
Excellent. So you need us to present a motion to accept the first draw of the ARP fund?
Yeah, I'd probably a motion to accept the whole
thing.
The whole 18.6 .. And I can get you the ..
Okay. So if this will get Kelly broadband, I'll make that motion.
Thank you very much.
Wait a minute.
Can I get a second on that, please?
Is that conditioned upon her getting it?
So I guess my point is I don't want to see us in a situation like when we took over the landfills in this county, when the sales tax revenue came into effect. And the other thing is that this money should be spent on capital projects, as far as I'm concerned. So we defray this cost from the taxpayers down the line. I don't want to see new programs being instituted with this money that we have to fund through taxpayer dollars. So
yeah, there's,
is that a second, John?
That's a second.
I think
it didn't sound like one.
I'll work with you all and the chairman in terms of when you want to have that. All right, let's get, you know, and I'll get feedback from the department head, but probably in the not too distant future, especially since some of these projects probably could start scoping and getting out to bid, knowing what's happening with the bid market. There's going to be a lot. Yeah. Once the towns and the villages and the cities get into the game, they're behind us because all their money flows through the state. We get ours directly from the feds, thankfully. Once they get into the game, there's going to be a lot of projects out there.
That's why we get the longer time frame, the 3-year time frame, in order to make this happen.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you could wait, but some of these things, I think, you know, it'll obviously be completely your choice, but there are some things that you've all discussed that seem pretty near term that you'd like to at least start working on, based on the discussion that I've heard, that there's probably no reason that you can't start that.
So as you alluded to, are you going to try to set up some kind of a committee to look at this, or?
Well, so we talked, I mean, do you need a special committee, things like that? I mean, you technically could repurpose like the ad hoc committee to be the point on this. You could have the finance committee be the point. Really, that is ultimately a call of the chairman. So
I think the one we had last year for the reopening and recovery is, I mean, a good start.
Okay.
That was the chairpersons of each committee.
Yeah, which is pretty much like the building committee, too.
Yeah. The Hilda committee?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't hear about that committee. All right. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Are there any other questions or any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. And that's it for me.
Before you go into executive session, I have a couple questions. Everybody got the sales tax email from Tammy. So that's looking good, surprisingly.
It'd probably look better down the line when gas prices go to $5 a gallon.
Yeah, when gas keeps going up.
I read something, I don't think it was an email, but it must have been online, about New York State Pension Fund having a very successful investment period. Yep. So that should help us from a budgetary standpoint.
Yeah, NYSAC, Chris and I had one of our annual, or we meet a couple times. We did it by Zoom, but with the administrators, managers, and NYSAC gave a day-long presentation. And they don't anticipate a pension cost increase, a local contribution share increase for this year.
Good.
Yay.
And my only third one is I would just, I guess going forward, I know this ERP system and the implementation is going to be over a course of years, but if we could just get a status update once a quarter on where we are, what work has been done, any concerns, that would just be helpful.
Sure. Sign the contract today.
Very good.
She's not wasting any time.
All right. Well, let's entertain a motion to go into executive session. Oh, sorry.
You had your hand up first.
Oh, so we have two more questions. Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Carol.
Anything new on VRBO?
No. I have continued to try to reach out through numerous channels and am getting nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, I've reached out through our federal representatives. I've reached out through, and I'm getting no response. Which is just
one weird. Other question. Have we thought about or had any discussion about back a small amount to our employees that since they didn't get any increases during COVID?
Well, so your COs, dispatchers had an active contract. You did ratify the main unit. So at that point, it's 75% of your employees did get an increase in 2020. Deputy sheriffs haven't wanted to sit down to negotiate yet. And management, my plan, whether you accept it or not, but my plan was to look at kind of a two-step increase for them for 2022 in lieu of the fact that they didn't get an increase in 2021. But with this ARP funding, now they call it, and we had discussion about it. You can leverage that ARP funding for, it's not hazard pay, but essentially response pay during the pandemic. But then we're going to have to get into the weeds and those people who are telecommuting are not going to be eligible for that.
Yeah.
That's going to be your call. If you want us to get into that, we'll happily do that.
That gets messy,
but that's where it gets complicated.
And that doesn't stay in their pay if you give them some kind of chunk of that money.
That would be a one-time shot.
I think we did very well last year by not putting anybody on the curb other than through our retirement incentive program. So handing out additional money is out of interest to me.
Well, and our view. So for management, I mean, I told you what I'd be proposing. It's going to be up to you where you set management salaries. But personally, I think that is a fair recommendation, at least on my end. The CSEA, we have the proposal on the street for revamping the salary grid. And like when you did with the COs and the dispatchers, they received a larger, and this is no promise. Obviously, we have to see what the results are. But in general, it was a larger than COLA increase to right-size them in terms of competition with where they are with other comparable counties. So that's on the table. I think you could fix it that way. And they already got something to get them through this year, a 1.25 for everyone off the grid. So it really is management and the deputy sheriffs that didn't receive any sort of pay adjustment in 2020-21.
I wish Jeff hadn't left, because I think one of the 800-pound gorillas in the room are all of our MEOs in the highway side. We have heard from current employees that work in shops that they can't hire people. You can't bring in a MEO truck driver with a CDL for $17 an hour. It's not competitive. And they're having a really hard time finding that. And it's just going to continue to get worse unless we at some point realize that we need to start raising rates for those people.
And I think that's one of the things, in my view, that we'll see from that salary study is what is the market bearing? What are other counties experiencing? That is without to say the current hiring environment, because even for our well-paid professional staff, we're having a hard time, just like every other business, finding people.
Yeah.
But we can at least get our rates to where we're competitive. And we know that in some areas that without talking to a consultant yet, that is one that to me looks like it needs to get moved. There are some that, in my opinion, don't very much, but there are some of those titles that we do.
So when will that study be ready?
We have the RFP on the street right now. When was it due? It was this week, last week?
So.
Yeah, it's due soon, because our hope was to bring it to you for approval in July and get them started, so that by the end of the year, we're somewhere close to, by budget time, we're somewhere close to a projection to plug numbers in.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yes.
Help. Real quick, I just wanted to comment on DiNapoli's newsletter talked about the audit that the 20 counties, we were lucky to be picked as one of the counties, and you and Tammy's team had done a good job of coming out and saying, the controller said we did a good job of preparing for the pandemic. So
that was comment. Controller audits are never fun. That was, at least on my end, the least painful one. So.
I was going to say, I don't think lucky and audit ever go in the same sentence.
Yeah, when we see those emails come through that you've been selected, we all go, oh,
yeah.
No. But yeah, that's probably the first one that I've seen that hasn't even nitpicked any corrective action. So, but it was a high level audit. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't what they did before where they'd be here for a month. Mm. So, but thank you. And no, Tammy's team is great.
All right. I believe we need to entertain a motion to go into executive session for real acquisition, lease, or sale of real property.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We are in executive session. Thank you.